October 12, 2012, Vrindavan, Nectar Devotion, Introduction. No, not Introduction, Chapter 1. Okay, we just had a quick question, then we do need to move on to the other characteristics, and that is, if a devotee continues to commit sinful activities even after taking up sadhana bhakti, does that produce more aparabdha and parabdha karma? And the answer is that as soon as you become a devotee, you're under Krishna's personal jurisdiction, and what happens to you is his business. So you're not really under the laws of karma at all once you become a devotee.
But does one really become a devotee?
Well, in the Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami quotes Lord Nisingadeva saying that as soon as a person one time says, "My dear Lord, from this day on I am yours," from that day he becomes the personal ward of the Lord. We discussed this already in regard to initiation. So sometimes we say at initiation the guru makes a contract that he's going to take all of your past karma. But you can also make the argument that as soon as a person says, "My Lord, I surrender unto you," that at that point Krishna is taking charge. So what happens to the sins you do as a devotee is real. I can't answer that question. That's Krishna's business for each individual person. To what extent they will get a reaction and what kind of reaction and when they will get it, it's a different, they're no longer in a mechanical system. Okay, number two, we also went over yesterday. So, and that is the other characteristic of pure devotional service in the sadhana stage, and that is that it's all auspicious, and it's auspicious because everyone finds it attractive, everyone gets benefit from it, everyone develops real saintly qualities. We talked about that yesterday, remember? How these qualities are real because they're on the platform of fearlessness and peace and courage. And also that one will start to experience some superior happiness. And even beginning devotees experience some superior happiness at least some of the time. We've all had a time when we ate prasadam and we said, "Wow, this has nothing, this experience has nothing to do with the ingredients." Or we're in the kirtan and we say, "Wow, this experience has nothing to do with the music." You know, you experience some happiness, and I talked about the difference between talking loudly and being amplified, that we can tell the difference in quality. So that's auspiciousness. We talked about that yesterday. Okay, going on to happiness above liberation. So happiness above liberation, just like if you're sick and you feel well, just feeling not sick is wonderful. But you also want to do activities of a not sick person. Just simply feeling not sick is not enough. So you graduate from college, you graduated, that's nice, but then you want a job. We don't want to be a jobless graduate. So by the stage of bhava, why in the stage of bhava? Because in the stage of bhava, you are already liberated. And you're starting to engage in the activities of Krishna consciousness in your heart. You're realizing your eternal nature, and you're starting to be in Krishna's lila in your heart. So you're experiencing a happiness that's beyond liberation. And the next one, that is very difficult to attain, that we will not see, you know, we won't find the whole world in 1 minute coming to the stage of bhava. Manusyanam sahasreshim kasyadyavati siddhaya yatatamapi siddhanam kashtimam veti tatvataha. It's unusual for people to come to the stage of bhava. And Rupa Goswami gives two reasons. One is you can't get there purely by your own endeavor. Your own endeavor isn't enough. It's necessary, but it's not sufficient. And there's so many things in life that are like that. You can't get a good job just by your own endeavor. Someone has to hire you. You know, you can't marry a good person by your own endeavor. I guess you can kidnap them, but otherwise, you know, they have to agree. That's the problem with the Midvik philosophy, you know. The other party has to agree. So Krishna has to agree. you can say, Krishna, I want to love you, I want to serve you, and he has to agree to hire you as his servant. It's a two-way street. So it's not just by one's own endeavor. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in the Nectar Devotion, really emphasizes the mercy of a devotee, the mercy of a devotee, the mercy of a devotee. Yes?
But it says in the first chapter that by engaging yourself in Krishna consciousness, they can come to Rome. So it doesn't say that you depend on someone else. But in Bhagavad Gita, it says that you depend on someone else.
What?
No, it says here...
Give me the page.
7.
Okay.
Only the devotees can cut the knot of this strong rope very easily by engaging themselves in Krishna consciousness.
Okay. So you're saying that sounds like they're doing it themselves?
Yeah. Like, of course, Krishna is there because you're Krishna consciousness.
Well, it's interesting. You know, there's one purport in Bhagavad Gita where Prabhupada says, Krishna is not partial, everything depends on your performance of Krishna consciousness. And then there's other places where he'll say, you know, it's all the mercy of Krishna. But it's both. I mean, obviously, Krishna can bring somebody, can free somebody from illusion, even if they haven't done everything. He has that power to do that. And sometimes Krishna does that. I mean, there are people who go through experiences where they're at least temporarily free from illusion. Maybe you've met, and I've met people like that. I've met ordinary people. They had some, you know, terrible disease or terrible accident, and they had some out-of-body experience, and they had some time for 5 minutes where somehow Maya was lifted for them. So that could be there, whether that's in their past life or just some previous city, I mean, who knows. So Krishna can do that. And generally, Krishna is responding to our sincerity of purpose, but it's not a mechanical process. It's not like these little machines I have here. You know, I have this little machine, and if I push this button, it does what I want it to do. If it doesn't do what I want it to do, I throw it away and I get a new one, or I have to fix it. This phone can't say, no, I know when to make the call. It doesn't have any free will, or this microphone. You know, if I turn it off, then it does off. And if I turn it on, it's on. It does what I want it to do. The microphone doesn't say, well, I'm kind of tired today. I don't think I want to turn on for you today. You know, it doesn't do this on a person. But a person's different. Now, I can say to you, oh, you can come and see me at 5 o'clock. And at 5 o'clock, if you come to see me, I might say, you know, I have something else I want to do. I changed my mind. I'm not obligated just because I told you I'd see you at 5 o'clock. Doesn't mean I'm obligated. Or I can give you my phone number, but I may choose not to answer the phone. And if you say to me, well, Amrita, you gave me your phone number, you have to answer the phone. I would actually feel offended. Wouldn't you feel offended? Someone says, well, how come dare you not answer the phone?
But we still expect in the future you will do it.
Huh?
We still expect that since you gave us a number, in the future you will do something. Maybe you're busy or...
Maybe. But still it's up to me. And if you treat me like that, then I probably won't answer the phone. I had one person like that. I had one person that was sending me like 10 emails a day. And I said, you can send me one. And she'd still send me 10. And I said, and they were all about the same thing.
She must have been young.
Not that young. She would say, but it's important. And I'd say, well, it's all right, one email. I'll get to it when I get to it. And then she'd say, but you gave me your email address. And finally, I had to block her emails.
I don't appreciate
that. That's exactly what he is doing.
You think so? If we pray about the same things to Krishna over and over again?
No, it's not that. It's the mood. It's the mood. If our mood is exploitive rather than service, then we're somewhat blocked. You know, I learned a lot from that girl, actually. I mean, I learned so much from that girl about what does it mean, what does love and service mean.
What was more attention on her part? Or?
Basically, just that I would say that I liked her and she was a nice person. And...
No, I mean, by her sending all these emails, was it because she wanted you, she wanted attention?
Yes, yes, very, yes. They're very eager. Yes, exactly.
So it's about her, not serving you.
Exactly. You got it. Now, she thought it was about service, but it wasn't. So if, and it was, it became so annoying that I finally had to say, you know, just don't contact me at all anymore. And I'd say, please don't call me. And then she'd ask other people and get my phone number anyway, and call me anyway. I ask you not to call me, but it's important. You know, so, yeah, Krishna definitely does that. If our mood is exploitive and selfish, if our mood is off, then even though he's given us his phone number, he may not be answering it. You know, and if we think like that, if we think, like this girl basically thought I was a machine to satisfy her own desires. She would even say that to me. She said, I want to do some service every day for you because it charges my batteries. So that's our general mood in this world, is I want to serve you because it does something for me. You know, I want to be with you because it does something for me. I'm trying to take from you. I feel empty inside and I want to take from you for myself. So when we approach Krishna like that, then he doesn't answer the phone, even though he gave us his number. He said, here's my number, you can call me anytime. But he doesn't want us to treat him like he's a machine. You know, with my little phone here, anytime I push it on, it should turn on. But we don't want to be treated like that. Anybody want to be treated like that? You know, if your wife says to you, oh, I'll be really happy if you bring me some flowers. And so you bring her some flowers and you say, okay, now you have to be happy with me. No, it's madness. It's not how a human being, it's not how a person behaves. No, it's not. Krishna's a person. He is a person. He's not an idea. He's not a happiness machine. He's not a relief from distress machine. He's a person with feelings. And what he's interested in is love. Therefore, it's very rare to be able to get to do service for Krishna with love and devotion, because if we're going through the motions, but we think, okay, Krishna's a happiness machine, or he's a liberation machine, and if I just push the right numbers in the right sequence, you know, then I'll just get what I want, like he's a vending machine. You know, in a vending machine, you get your candy bar, soda. Just put in the money and you press the buttons and out comes your soda, and if your soda doesn't come, you kick the machine. So Krishna doesn't like that. Therefore, it's rare. So one has to come to the point of doing one's sadhana with attachment, with care for Krishna, with some sort of attachment for Krishna as a person, where I'm thinking about making Krishna happy instead of making me happy. It's not easy. And Prabhupada keeps saying it's by the mercy of the devotee, it's by the mercy of the devotee, it's by the mercy of the devotee. So in one sense it's me. If I'm not even calling Krishna, he's not going to answer the phone. I have to call him. You know, it's not likely Krishna's going to call me because I'm the one who offended him. I'm the offender. If someone offends me, they have to call me, I don't call them. Right? Right?
Does
yes?
It depend on
usually. If it's 100%, if they're 100% the offender and I'm 0%, no, they have to call me. So Krishna always makes himself available, maybe not always, but generally in human society, there's some system of religion, and he makes his phone number readily available to all of human society. But you have to make the call. Sometimes Krishna may call. That's Kripa City. But generally, the jiva has to make the effort to reach out to Krishna. Yeah. But still, Krishna has to decide, okay, yes, you can come. He has to invite you. He has to accept you. You can't just assume that he has to. And that mood that he has to, in fact, will predispose him to wait. And so that's the first reason it's rare, because it depends on Krishna's mercy. And why on Krishna's mercy? Because it attracts him. And it's interesting that this attracting Krishna is also mentioned twice. Here and here. So there's an attracting Krishna that happens in bhava, and a more attracting Krishna that happens in prema. So even in bhava, even when one enters into bhava, Krishna starts to feel very attracted. What attracts Krishna is that there's actual love. I mean, that attracts us also. If somebody really just loves me, actually loves me, that's very attractive, right? No, it's real love. It's real love. If someone just likes me for who I am and isn't trying to get something from me, that's very attractive. Now, I don't know too many people like that, but I know some.
It's equally rare.
It's very rare. It's very rare. I mean, I can think of just a few people in the world who really, who even know me well enough to like me for who I am. Most people like their idea of me rather than me.
What is that?
They like who they think I am, instead of liking me. Most people, I don't feel comfortable showing all the parts of me. So there's a few people I've met that I'm actually comfortable showing all the different parts of me, and they like me for who I am. They don't think I'm wonderful just because of the wonderful parts of me, and they don't think I'm terrible just because of the terrible parts of me. And all they just want to be with me and make me happy. They don't want something from me. They're not hoping I'm going to give them something, gross or subtle. So you want to be with people like that, you know, right?
Yes.
Definitely. Definitely. That was one of the reasons that Srila Prabhupada was so attractive. Because he genuinely loved people and he didn't want anything from them. He wasn't exploiting anything from them. That's one of the attractive features of a genuine saintly person, is you feel they have real love without exploitation. So Krishna is also attracted to that, even though he doesn't need anything. So that's at the bhava platform. Then at the prema platform, not just happiness above liberation, but unbelievable happiness, and condensed happiness. Happiness beyond conception, unlimited happiness. And then Krishna is overwhelmingly attractive. Prabhupada says the pure devotee holds Krishna in the palm of their hand. You know, something like in this world that the parents are attracted to the young child. You know, the very, very young child. Or Prasanta was telling me about the monkey. She said, you know, if any of the monkeys think you're going to hurt one of the little babies, they'll all attack you. You know, they're willing to risk getting hurt and whatever for that protection. So that intense, Krishna feels that intense attraction for the devotee. You know, Krishna so much wants to protect Arjuna that he goes to fight with Bhishma and breaks his vow. So that Krishna is willing to break his own promise, and it's so many things for the love of his devotee. Because he's so much attracted to how much that devotee loves him. All right, I'm going to do a little exercise. And I'd like you all to get out a blank piece of paper. An empty piece of paper. All right, now without looking at the board, and please be honest, without looking at the board and without looking at what you already wrote, without looking at your books, without looking at any notes, I want you to write down as much as you possibly can remember, and leave blank spaces for what you can't remember, and then when you feel you're done, go around the room to whoever you want to ask, and ask them to help you fill in your blank spaces, and you help them fill in their blank spaces. Actually, why don't we take 5 minutes, and we'll do as much as we can, and then we'll go around and ask other people to help fill in our blank spaces. So first take 5 minutes, starting now, as much as you can remember from the list, and without looking at your old list. No looking at the old list, no looking at books, no looking at notes, no looking at your neighbors.
Oh, do you want us to replicate what's on the board?
Yes, without looking at the board, as much as you can. Okay? 5 minutes. Ready. Set. Go. Okay, we have about 20 minutes left. Any questions? I'd like to take your questions now on chapter one. Yes?
Yes. I mean, this list, verse 7 over 6, it tracks Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So what about other jivas? I mean, they're also attracted, right?
Yes,
so
definitely.
So there is something that is pertaining to the...
There definitely other jivas are also attracted, generally.
If it attracts Krishna, does it attract like these parts of parcels?
Generally. Generally. I mean, you will find a demoniac, just like demoniac beings are attracted to Krishna to kill him, so demoniac beings are also attracted to saintly persons to try to kill them. So that, you know, their attraction may be out of envy. And sometimes the saintly person, of course, is not recognized by the general populace, like Jed Bart with Maharaj or Hugana. But yes, saintly persons are very attractive also to other jivas. Yes?
Me, okay, yes, because I had so many questions. So
well, just start with one.
Okay, how can Rupa Goswami feel unfit to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world when he's a disciple of Mahaprabhu?
This is the beautiful dual nature of humility. That humility, you see, I'm unfit, but yet, by the mercy of Guru, by the mercy of God, I am fit. So if you read the Krishna Das Kaviraj and Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says, I'm lower than the worm in the stool. If you say my name, I become sinful. But I've been given the service of Radha Madan Mohan. So he's. Remember I was saying that you really can't feel bad about being dirty unless you can also exult in being a diamond? Right? If you're a pig, there's nothing to lament about being dirty. It's no shame for a pig to sleep in the sewer, but it's a shame if any of us were to sleep in the sewer. So, in order to feel humble, you also have to feel the other side also. So the devotee is seeing the difference between their smallness and Krishna's mercy, and it's making them fall more in love with Krishna. If they're thinking that they're very qualified, they're not really in love with Krishna. I'll tell you when I understood this, when I was 45, and the devotees in my community gave me a birthday party, which I didn't expect. And I felt so grateful and so happy. And I realized the more you don't expect something, the more pleasure you get from it. So I give this example a lot. So you have 100 rupees, and you go to the shop, and you buy something, and it's worth 100 rupees. How do you feel?
Satisfied.
Yes, satisfied. Okay. You have 100 rupees, you go to the shop, you buy something, you find out it's only worth 20 rupees. How do you feel?
Bad.
Pretty bad. You have 100 rupees, you go to the shop, you buy something, you find that it's worth 1,000 rupees. How do you feel? Wonderful. So our happiness is in direct relation to our feeling of unworthiness to get that happiness. The more you feel worthy, the less you enjoy what you get. And the less you feel worthy, the more you enjoy what you get. So if you're seeing both, I'm getting wonderful mercy from Krishna that I don't deserve at all, your happiness is very high. If you think I'm very fit and very deserving, then whatever you get, you're not satisfied with it. A lot of the problem in our human relations is like that. I deal with another human being thinking that this is what you owe me, this is what you should give me, this is what I deserve, and then I'm never happy with anything you give me. So that's, love and humility are very intertwined. You see, you know, sometimes people have long-term relationships and they just expect the other person to do something and they lose their sense of gratitude. Well, of course you're going to cook dinner every day, that's your job. You know, and yet they don't thank you for it. As if you're not doing it voluntarily every single day. So the humility and the love are very intertwined. Yes. Somebody else. Everybody should have. We'll come back to you. Everybody should have at least one. Yes.
What is the specific difference between Sandrananda, Vishwatma, and Sri Krishna?
Okay. The first one, which I wrote down the details of it somewhere here. Yes. Did I? I know I did. Oh, I've lost it. It has to do with concentrated. Let me write it down. Because I was really interested in it. Well, Atma, of course, means the self. Visesh, unlimited. Ananda, bliss. Sandra, I believe, means impenetrable. Concentrated. I wrote it down somewhere, but I don't know where I wrote it down. Oh, here it is. The special nature is impenetrably condensed, concentrated bliss. And karshini, karshini means to attract. The verb karsh is where the word Krishna comes from. Karsh, to attract. So you're attracting the attractive. And of course, Prabhupada gives the example in Nectar Devotion that it's because devotional service is under the control of Radharani who's attracting Krishna. If you have everything, you're not attracted by anything, but you're attracted by someone who loves you. So a very rich person, they're not going to be attracted by houses and cars, but they'll be attracted by someone who loves them. So Krishna's attracted by love.
So Sandrananda also, it is attractive, that is why feeling intense bliss.
Why is one feeling intense bliss? Because one's connected with the source of all bliss.
What is the difference in one level and second level?
Yes.
Oh, it's on the same level.
Both on the same level.
Okay.
Quality 1 and 2 are at the same level.
Yeah.
3 and 4 are at the same level. 5 and 6 are the same.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Now we are in the connection to all the devotional services and Antashmati Radharani.
Yes.
So in the spiritual world, we can see that different group, the Gopal is Nanda Krishna, and the Gopis is Antashmati Radharani. So ultimately, it is actually both Gopal and Gopis are like under control of Shmati Radharani.
Yes, everybody.
So when Rupa Goswami says that verse, when I say Krishna,
I want millions of years and millions of times.
So it comes into...
Yes.
Yes. But then, yeah, I mean, they're gone by Jana or Sneha.
Okay, so Rupa Goswami is saying that, you know, karma will not destroy all the stress. And he gives the example of a jamil, that it was destroyed only by bhakti. But with a jamil, it was destroying the kutam and the bijam. But you might say, well, jnana will also give you freedom from all distress, because jnana also destroys avidya. But it doesn't completely destroy avidya, because you don't become Krishna's servant. And the analogy that Rupa Goswami gives is a forest fire kills the snakes. The other animals can run away, but the snakes can't. They get killed. So Krishna consciousness kills the deepest ignorance, which even ordinary jnana cannot kill.
It's ordinary jnana. It's not jnana like in the Bhagavad Gita, it's jnana, jnana means adhaka, varamta, mamo, pandita, buddha. Then the shlok, they say in the fire of jnana, all the simplicities are burned.
Well, it's yes and no. Because if one attains liberation in the Brahman, all of their sinful activities are burned up. All of their avidya is burned up. But avidya will tend to re-manifest. So, yes and no. Therefore, we can say, Avasuddha Buddhya, their intelligence is still not fully purified. Prabhupada says, like the astronauts, they go to the moon, but then they come back to Earth. They have no place to stay. They haven't found someplace else that's secure. So in one sense, yes, jnana destroys even avidya. But because it doesn't give you positive engagement, the avidya tends to come back.
Because it's not transcendental knowledge. The jnana is not transcendental knowledge.
It is. But it's not mature enough.
It's not in practice that you're doing it like chanting.
It is transcendent. It is transcendental knowledge. It does destroy avidya, but not. It doesn't give you something positive.
Because you're not active in that practice?
Yes. Yeah, it happens sometimes when people are in jail, in prison, for a very, very long time, and then they're released. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to act as a free citizen. And some of them want to go back to jail.
They have their identity as a prisoner.
Yes. We have all these interesting visitors in our class. Yes, they have their identity as a prisoner. And they actually feel comfortable in that identity as a prisoner. So all the time they're in prison, they're thinking, I want to get out, I want to get out, I want to get out. And then once they get out, because they don't have any identity as a free person anymore, you know, they went to jail when they were 20, and then when they get out, they're 70 years old, and they don't know what to do. And sometimes they'll commit crimes again just so they can go back to prison and feel comfortable again. So jnana, yes, it does destroy avidya, and it does give you liberation. It is transcendental knowledge. But it's not, being in the Brahmajyoti isn't secure. So you can say, the person who's out of jail, but not situated out of jail, you can say they're not fully free. They're fully free, but they're not fully free, because they don't have any place. Is that... Okay. They are fully free. It's not that they're not fully free. They are. So one who's realized Brahman is fully free, but it's hard for them to stay that way. It's not a solid situation.
So what's the next step further to go in devotional service?
It's very difficult. Generally, to go further in devotional service, you need sadhu sangha. So generally that means, you know, going back to the material world and getting a body again. Perhaps there's other ways, but that generally would be what it means.
So I wanted to spark your case for the outside life jail. only have spark.
Yeah, but generally what that will mean is coming back to the material world and getting another material body to get sadhusanga.
So then there's no freedom.
Hmm?
Then there's no freedom. Because they're going to come back to the material world. It's awful.
Well, when they come back to the material world, they won't have any karma. They get a very high body. And perhaps there's other ways. Perhaps they can just go from there, I don't know. Yes?
I have a question about Sanatana Goswami's book. I heard it last time that he had a fight, a quarrel with Mirabai. Do you know
what?
Sanatana Goswami had a quarrel with Mirabai.
A quarrel with Mirabai? I don't know anything about it. Yes.
So, on page 5, it says that how is it possible that anyone actually engaged in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness has not become purified? It's not possible. One is engaged in Krishna consciousness and devotional service has without doubt become free from all contamination of material sinful activities. So my question is, how is it that people or devotees that still after chanting 30 years or more are not purified? Or are still, performing so many aparas and...
Okay, somebody like to answer that question?
Because of
offenses.
Okay, could be offensive. Other answers? Yes?
So we are attached with this, you were saying, subtle gross karma from previous life, is still holding on it. Mm-hmm. Even we are chanting, but we are still attached to that.
I think it's a combination of things. Wouldn't it be that you're feeding the lowers more than the fruitful side of devotional service? Like we're talking about that in Bhagavad Gita in the last class about how you can either feed the weeds or you feed the fruitful.
You can't eat, you can't be watering. Yeah?
Would be the sincerity of the mood in which we are doing the devotional service?
We can again create karmas after
that. Well, this is what we were discussing. Can you again create karmas? That's difficult because you're really out of the karma system. You're in the Krishna system instead of the karma system. But you can certainly create offenses.
Another little thing that our tendency to make a mistake with that is
But I think you're saying, why does it sometimes take people 30, 40 years and you're still not out of an Arjuna Vritti? Any other thoughts? I mean, I have my answer, but I'd like to hear your thoughts. Yeah?
It depends how they're practicing. Because you can practice, not really practice.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You don't want it.
Yeah, it really comes down to that.
Yeah,
exactly. It really comes down to
that. Association also.
Associations.
They haven't taken the association of the devotee.
But according to that's like there's someone who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and devotional service means like they've been living in a temple for 30 years.
But remember, devotional service was Shilanam. Okay? Who remembers what Shilanam is? Who remembers what Shilanam is?
Shilanam
is activity. Or cultivation?
Yeah, activities.
Cultivation.
Oh, thank you. His body is so fragile, and it doesn't take much to finish it off. Thank you. So, it's very easy to do devotional service with your body. What about with your mind? I can just tell you my take on this, that I look at Bhagavad Gita and see, okay, Arjuna first, he gets close to Krishna. He says, Krishna, I'm going to be your disciple. I'm going to surrender to you. Then Krishna gives him knowledge. Then Krishna says, what does he say at the end of Bhagavad Gita? Now I've given you all the knowledge, now you? Yeah, you choose. I meant one. Indian man who said, that's my favorite verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, now you do what you like. Whatever you want, now you do. He said, I follow that instruction. So Krishna says, now you choose, you do what you like. He says, but if you follow me, you'll be happy, and if you don't follow me, you'll be ruined. Then Arjuna says, okay, I'm going to follow you. And then Krishna says, okay, then I'm going to give you all protection. So I see it's like that. You have to get close to Krishna. That means we do our service with care and attention and love and attachment. Not just with the body, but also with the mind, with the thinking, feeling, and willing. When we get close to Krishna, he reveals. Tesham Sajitanam Bhajatam Vritti Purvakam Dadama Guryogam Tami Namam Kandida Tesham Evadakam Partham Ahamam Gyanam Jantamah Nasayam Yatma Bhava Sokyan Deepin Vashvata. He shows you. What does he reveal? What does he show you? Yeah, but what specific, what do you see?
I see your faults.
Okay, so you see your faults. You see yourself honestly. Now, as a beginning devotee, seeing the self honestly mostly means seeing the faults. You know, if you're covered in sewage, when you look in the mirror, you're mostly going to see sewage. As you advance, you start to see a little bit of the diamond under the sewage. So you'll see yourself. What else do you see?
Guides you from within to devotee association. And
no, but you'll see something. What will you see?
It's
you seeing yourself. That's if you can see the diamond under the sewage. What else do you see?
I see a copy.
You'll see Maya in general. You'll see illusion. What else will you see? Huh? Someone say? What else will you see? Tara Krishna turned on the light. Jnana Deepena. What will you see?
How you can reach them? How we can reach him?
You'll see Krishna. He's in your heart, turning on the light. What will you see? What's in your heart? You, Krishna, and Maya. Right?
Yes.
Isn't that what's in our heart? Yes? No? Yes?
Yes?
Yes. And then you see it, and then Krishna will say to you, now I've showed you everything, now you?
Choose.
And if you choose Krishna, he'll help you, and if you choose Maya, it'll be an illusion. Okay, now let's say either you don't really get close to Krishna. You just do the process officially. He's not going to show you very much. So that's one problem. Is there a problem out there?
No, I just thought it was a monkey.
Oh, okay. Let's say he shows you, here's you, here's where you are now, here's your Maya, here's your attachment, here's me. What happens if you then choose Maya? Can you choose Maya when Krishna shows you? Do you have that freedom?
Yes.
Yes. Suppose you choose Maya. What will happen?
You become covered over?
Yeah, think of it like this. Let's say you have a really messy room in your house. In America, it's usually the garage, or they say in the UK, the garage. Or maybe the attic, or the cellar, or the closet. What do you guys, somebody call a wardrobe. So let's say you have some place that's really dirty, it's full of old stuff. And you ask a friend, come and help me clean it, so they come. You know, you're too attached, you just can't clean it out yourself. So the friend comes and opens up the door and says, oh, look at this. This is all rotted and it's broken. And you say, that? That's from my grandma. And your friend says, well, maybe, but look, it's covered with mold, and it's broken, and it's all stained. But it's from my grandma. Your friend says, okay, all right, what about this thing? Ew! It stinks! That thing, I've been keeping that for 20 years! I need that in case I ever move back to Brazil. But it's all stinky. Oh, but okay. Then your friend says, what about this? Oh, look at it. It's all broken and frayed and rats have been eating it and it's covered with rat stools. That? Oh, I really like that. So after a while, if you're the friend, what will you do?
Stop cleaning.
You'll stop cleaning.
Yeah.
You'll say, excuse me, call me when you're ready. Goodbye. So what I see happens is Krishna shows in the heart, this is what you need to do. Now choose. And if a person chooses illusion, especially if they choose illusion repeatedly, then the person themselves doesn't even want to go close to Krishna. You don't want to call your friend over to look through your stuff if they're just going to tell you what's wrong with everything you're attached to. So what I see is devotees will get into a space, they don't even want to chant attentively. They don't even want to do their things attentively. They just start doing things officially, because if they do something attentively, Krishna will light up their heart and say, hey, you've got to work on this. So Krishna can back off and say, well, I don't really know if I'm going to show up, because every time I show up, you don't want me. You want to keep your attachments. And you can also feel, well, I don't really know if I want that Krishna to come over, because when he comes over, he tells me to get rid of all these things that I want to keep. Now, you can stay in any of these stages of bhakti for as long as you want. There's no automatic progression. Krishna's not going to force you to become purified and to go to the next level. It's just not. You know, if you want to, I mean, I've seen people stay at just Anushraddha for 30, 40 years. They like Krishna, they believe that Krishna's God, they come to the temple two or three times a year, you know. They have a subscription to Back to Godhead, they look at it, they have a picture of Krishna in their house, and they've been that way for 30 years. And I've seen people for 30 years, they'll come to the temple on Sunday and they do some service, but they never follow the process, they never get initiated, they never take it seriously.
So sad.
Yeah. I'm sure that the great devotees look at me and think I'm very sad. So, yeah, it is very sad. But the key is to have the courage to choose Krishna and reject Maya when Krishna says that it's that choose. And Krishna says choose, you know, in your heart. He'll say it through the guru's instructions. He'll say it through Prabhupada's purports. So many ways. Krishna will tell you, okay, here's the anarja that it's time to get rid of. And when you just say, yes, Lord, I'm going to do it. I don't know what the price is. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how I might suffer, but I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to choose you. You know, Arjuna was so afraid. He had so many fears. Hey, Krishna, if I follow your instruction, I'll destroy the family. I'll go to hell. All these unprotected women will be there, and I won't even enjoy the kingdom because all my relatives will be killed, and it'll just be terrible, and I don't want to do it. And then finally at the end he said, I'm going to do it, whatever happens. Whatever happens, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to trust you. I'm going to do it. If we do that consistently, then our progress will be very, very rapid. So I see that in Krishna consciousness we do get purified, but our rate of purification is very, very much up to us. Some people get purified very quickly, some people take, you know, forever. And especially if we back off and start becoming inattentive and just go through the motions. You know, and some people, nobody can tell them what's dirty in their closet anymore. Do we all know people like this? You can't go anywhere near them. You can see, oh my God, they're carrying around this old, stinky, rotting thing everywhere they go. See my beautiful thing from my grandma's? Like, it stinks. But you can't tell them because they'll punch you. Right? Krishna tries to tell them, they punch Krishna. We can't tell them. So until we're ready to see. So I see this as a real simple thing. Am I attached to illusion or do I know the truth? Just really, 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 really simple. It's super simple. Do I want to see the truth? Do I want to be in the truth?
But won't Krishna give us some lesson so that we can become
detached
because it's all
on our mental. Oh, yeah, he'll help you, but it's far better to be cooperative. It'll be much faster. And Krishna won't force. Okay, thank you very much. Tomorrow we are going to be doing all of chapter 2. We're going to do the whole chapter 2.
Yeah.
Thank you.